May it please the Court, my name is Shelley Geppert. I'm with the firm of Eimer Stahl, who is representing plaintiff appellant James Brooks. Mr. Brooks is here as well. Mr. Brooks is appealing the District Court's December 23, 2011 order granting defendants motion to dismiss the Second Amended Complaint with prejudice. The District Court erred in dismissing Brooks' Second Amended Complaint for two reasons.
You know, his problem is, seems to me, that there's no reference here to a long-term disability plan.
Your Honor?
That would last beyond your employment.
If you take a look at paragraphs 103 and 104 of the Second Amended Complaint, paragraph 104 is specifically incorporating, by reference and paraphrasing, the annual enrollment guide, which summarizes the Prairie Packaging, Inc. employee welfare benefits plan, which is under ERISA, a benefits plan. In paragraph 103 and 104 of the Second Amended Complaint, as we set forth, under the annual enrollment guides, employees are entitled to benefits continuing until the age of 65. These are the benefits that Mr. Brooks is seeking.
But if they cease to be employees, where's the provision in the benefits plan which continues their benefits after they cease to be employees?
Your Honor, as we've pleaded and argued, we believe that long-term disability benefits would be meaningless if they could, in fact, be cut off when someone's employment is terminated.
Yes, I know, but that's why you need a long-term disability benefits plan rather than an employee benefit plan, right?
Well, I think what Mr. Brooks has done is set forth claims plausible enough to satisfy the Iqbal and Twombly standard, in which case we can proceed to discovery and take a look at the plan.
Where's the plan?
The plan was not attached. Neither party attached the...
Well, I don't understand that. The whole argument is about the plan, and the plan isn't in the record.
That's correct, Your Honor.
How can you win a case when you haven't put the essential document into record?
We believe it is incorporated by reference in paragraph 104 of the Second Amended Complaint.
By reference. Why isn't it an exhibit?
Your Honor, I don't have an answer as to why it was not.
It's ridiculous. You have a suit based on a document, and you don't have the document in the record.
Your Honor, I agree that the plan should have been attached. I don't think that's a basis.
What kind of lawyering is that? I just don't understand it. A suit on a contract and no contract in the record.
I don't know if that is a basis to throw out the Second Amended Complaint for failing to state a claim.
I can't imagine litigating a case which is about a document, and the document is not in the record.
Well, again, Your Honor, I think if we take a look at paragraph 104 of the Second Amended Complaint, we are setting forth the essence of the plan.
Why didn't you put the document in the record?
Your Honor, we did not handle the case in the trial court level. We are handling it on appeal. I have the complaint as it was pled by prior counsel, and that is, we do feel it is sufficient to proceed, and we do feel that the district court erred in dismissing the complaint for failure to state a claim for which relief could be granted. Under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 8, the evidentiary support for the facts pled in the complaint is not required. That occurs later on in the course of discovery. For a motion to dismiss, what we're looking at is whether or not the complaint plausibly states a claim for which relief can be granted. We allege that it does. If you take a look at the Smith case, the defendant's cite to the court there also found that by not attaching a plan, it did not mean that the claim could be dismissed on a motion to dismiss, but rather view that as evidence that would be set forth in the facts of, in the course of discovery. Excuse me. It is uncontested that Mr. Brooks is an at-will employee.
It's hard to imagine a stupider way to conduct the litigation, right? So the suit is filed in 2010, and the complaint is dismissed the end of 2011. The whole suit is about this plan. What's in the plan? Why isn't the plan the first thing that would go to the judge? Why didn't the judge ask for the plan?
I don't have the answer to that, Your Honor. I think, again, the plan itself would be evidentiary support of the facts alleged. The
That's ridiculous. The plan is the subject of the lawsuit.
And if you take a look at paragraph 104 of the second amended complaint, it does set forth the essence of the plan, and what Mr. Brooks is asserting is his rights as a long-term disabled former employee of defendants.
It's totally ambiguous.
Well, I think in the course of discovery, we'll take a look at the plan. It requires some pointed discovery, as Your Honor has pointed out.
There is no plan.
Well, there is a plan, Your Honor. It just was not entered into evidence.
The notion that you have to wait for discovery in order to get the plan into the case is ridiculous. It's not just you. It's your opponent. I don't understand. It's such a waste of judicial time.
Well, I think, Your Honor, the facts alleged...
We're considering the case in a vacuum.
Well, Your Honor, it's not an...
You want us to send it back so you can have discovery. So it's going to be years before someone looks at the plan, which may, in 1 minute, answer the question of the case.
It might, in which case someone can file a motion for summary judgment. It will be resolved.
Why haven't you given us the plan?
Well,
have you ever looked at the plan?
We looked at the annual enrollment guide, Your Honor.
What do you mean you looked at the annual enrollment guide? Have you ever looked at the plan?
I do not have a copy. There was no discovery in this case. It's a second amended complaint.
Discovery to get a plan? The members of the plan are entitled to the plan.
What I have is the annual enrollment.
Your client just asked for the plan.
But what I have, Your Honor, is the annual enrollment guide, which summarizes the terms of the plan.
Why do you have the plan? Why don't you tell your client to write the company and say, I want the plan? I don't get it.
Well, I think, again, Your Honor, that's something that there can be very pointed discovery on, and a motion for summary judgment.
You don't need discovery to get the plan.
Well, at this stage in the proceedings, we are tied to the second amended complaint and the district court's opinion and order.
This is such a waste of time.
It is uncontested that Mr. Brooks is an at-will employee. However, the focus of this appeal is whether, pursuant to Iqbal and Twombly, Brooks properly pleaded a claim for his insurance benefits, which he is entitled to receive until age 65. Again, I turn the court's attention to paragraphs 103 of the second amended complaint, which states that under the annual enrollment guides, it was expressly understood that disabled employees could continue receiving benefits under the plan. Paragraph 104 of the second amended complaint pleaded that employees with long-term disabilities were entitled to continue receiving benefits under the plan until they reached
the age of 65. What's the basis of the representations in the complaint about what the plan says?
The annual enrollment guides, Your Honor.
And who has that? Who's seen that?
Our office, the office that is now handling it on appeal, has seen that. I'm assuming that defendants Pactiv and Prairie Packaging,
but
who put out the document.
Seen it.
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Do you realize how ridiculous is this, or do you think this is the normal way in which litigation and appeals are conducted?
I don't think this is the normal way. I do think that we are bound to the record of the district court, in which case, the essence of the annual enrollment guide was incorporated in by reference. I think that satisfies our obligation under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 8, and I believe that the guide itself is evidentiary support of the facts alleged in the complaint, which at this stage in the proceeding should be accepted as true. We're happy to provide additional briefing to the court and provide copies of the guides if the court so wishes. The claims that Mr. Brooks is pursuing in his appeal for insurance benefits until the age of 65, approximately another 4 years, were raised in the second amended complaint as discussed, and Brooks's prior counsel addressed this in the opposition to the motion to dismiss, stating that the annual guides to the program gave Mr. Brooks expressly stated that disabled employees could continue to receive benefits under the plan and that Mr. Brooks was entitled under his benefits package to all insurance
paid. You say he's not an employee.
He is no longer an employee. Under ERISA, is an
employee. I just read it and you said disabled employees are entitled to benefits and he's not an employee.
That was probably not the best wordsmithing on the part of the complaint, but I think the point is...
Not the best. It seems to me you pleaded yourself out of the case.
No, I mean, since 19...
He's benefits for disabled employees. He's not an employee, so he's not entitled to them.
Well, I think the terms of the plan itself, again, we need to look at the plan.
We don't know what the plan says.
This is really a workers' compensation retaliation claim.
That is...
This has nothing to do with ERISA.
Well, the ERISA allegations that we are pursuing on appeal is to, one, get an injunctive relief that defendants can stop interfering with Mr. Brooks'
right.
future
this,
benefits.
This was, I mean, there's lots and lots of allegations in this complaint about the context of this injury and the fact that there was a disputed workers' compensation claim and that your client was out on workers' comp leave pursuant to the Illinois state regulations about workers' compensation claims and what employers can and can't do during the pendency of a disputed claim. And when it looked like he was going to be very costly, apart from his the contested claim, the employer fired him. That's a workers' compensation retaliation claim. That's not an ERISA claim.
And the workers' compensation retaliation claim is being pled as count 4 in the second amended complaint.
Right.
And why is this workers' compensation claim 11 years old?
I am not handling, Your Honor, I'm not handling the workers' compensation claim.
Workers' compensation benefits, and yet it says that the case is pending. I don't understand. Is that how things work? I thought they awarded you workers' compensation, and now is the end of the case.
There's a claim for permanent disability, as I understand the complaint, which is a lump sum payment under state workers' compensation law that...
Yeah,
that's the crux of the dispute.
The dispute.
And if he came back to work under orders from his employer on pain of termination, he would be undercutting his claim of permanent disability.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely.
That he was fit to work, and that undermines his claim for some permanent disability under state workers' compensation.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think the point is that since when Mr. Brooks was permanently disabled in 1999 and filed the workers' compensation claim, and as pled in paragraph 3 of the second amended complaint, he said he was permanently disabled. He could not return to work. So whether or not we want to call it a long-term leave of absence.
The compensation commission agreed.
Correct, Your Honor.
So why is the case still pending?
That I don't know. It's a different firm handling the workers' compensation claim.
Oh, that's good. Now I have three firms.
There's a lot of firms if you take a look at the record. And I just don't have the answers to that. But the point is, I think there's a lot of terminology that we're throwing around. And, in fact, I think just common sense. The man in 1999 has said he's permanently disabled and cannot return to work. What was he receiving, if not long-term disability benefits in the form of health and dental insurance through his former employer? That's what he thought he was receiving this whole time. It wasn't until they cut those benefits off in 2010 that he filed this lawsuit to try to claim those benefits, which he thought he'd been receiving. There was no question that he couldn't return to work. His arm was caught in the machine. It was amputated, and he suffered ongoing physical and mental impairment.
Yeah, we understand that.
There's no
okay.
way.
Thank you, Ms. Gepper. We'll have to move on. Mr. Ryan?
Thank you. May it please the Court, William Ryan on behalf of Appalese Pactiv LLC and Prairie Packaging, Inc. The District Court properly dismissed all counts of the second amended complaint.
Why is the workers' compensation case still going on after 11 years?
There is no indication in the record as to why it has not been either finally resolved or settled. The second amended complaint...
No one is curious about that.
I don't have an answer for that as well, Judge.
Vanities of law, right?
The workers' compensation is not an area that I'm abundantly familiar with.
Pointlessly. Just life.
There's nothing in the record that explains the obvious question that Your Honor is asking.
Why wasn't it obvious to you as a representative of the employer when one of the claims here is workers' compensation retaliation? Wouldn't the first thing you would do is investigate what the status of the claim is?
Well, we understood from the Second Amended complaint, and I believe that that is correct, that the proceeding is ongoing. As to why it is ongoing, I did not seek an answer to that. Although it was slightly surprising, it did not shock me that a workers' compensation claim would be open that long. It's not the area of law that I specialize in, but I did not think that that was an issue that had an impact on the case as it was presented to the district court. But Judge Sykes,
that's the tail that's wagging the dog here, as I understand this case. We've got a workers' compensation retaliation claim wagging the ERISA dog, and you know whether the employer fired this employee because of the dispute over the scope of the claim, which is apparently as yet unresolved, is the crux of the case, and whether the allegations are sufficient to allege that there was a but-for causation, or whatever, it's not a but-for causation in Illinois workers' compensation law, but he has to have been terminated with the motive being the workers' compensation claim.
Yes, Judge. The Second Amended complaint does plead that he has been receiving benefits uninterrupted for all this time, and his workers' compensation benefits were not affected in any way by the termination of his employment.
But his claim for permanent disability is disputed. As I understand it, they're $300,000 apart.
The resolution of the lump sum payment has not been decided, as it's pled in the Second Amended complaint.
Right, and he alleges that he was terminated because of that dispute. Why isn't that enough to survive dismissal on that claim, apart from the problems with the ERISA claims?
Well, Judge, the retaliation claim suffers from similar problems in that the Second Amended complaint alleges that he is permanently disabled and is unable to return to work. Under the Illinois Supreme Court's Heartline case, because he is unable to work, his employment can be terminated, even though his injury and his inability to work was compensable under the Workers' Compensation Act. As the Heartline case explains, in order to establish a retaliation claim, you need more than just the mere fact that the employer terminated the employee for his inability to return to work. And the Second Amended complaint does not contain any allegations that gives you the more. All it alleges is that Pactiv learned about the workers' compensation claim and then terminated his employment. But the termination of his employment was lawful and proper under Heartline. The Second Amended complaint also contains facts showing...
Well, as I understand it, the complaint alleges that he was ordered to return to work and on pain of termination, and if he didn't return to work, he would be terminated, and therefore he was put in the kind of catch-22 that the Heartline case talks about, which is to say that the employer can't assert its right to terminate the employee if that puts him in a position of having to choose between his workers' compensation, the position he's taken in the workers' compensation claim, and maintaining his job. Isn't that the thrust of the Heartline case?
Oh, well, Judge, that factor is not an issue in our case because the letter that Pactiv sent...
Well, if he's permanently disabled, he can't be an employee, right? I don't understand.
We agree, Judge Posner. But in response to Judge Sykes' question, the letter that Mr. Brooks received did not threaten or implicate his workers' compensation benefits at all. This was not a case where Pactiv was saying, come to work or there's going to be an adverse impact on your workers' compensation benefits. The letter specifically says that his workers' compensation benefits are not affected in any way.
Fact that this workman's compensation litigation is still going becomes relevant, right? I mean, you'd think he gets his workers' compensation, he's permanently disabled, he can never work again, fine. Pactiv discovers it, and they say, well, if you can't come back to work, you know, you're fired. And that's perfectly fine. But the fact that the workman's compensation proceeding is somehow current makes you wonder whether terminating him somehow affects that proceeding.
Well, Judge Posner, the Second Amendment complaint makes clear that Pactiv and its predecessor, Prairie, were aware of the workers' compensation proceeding during the entire time. And the letter that was sent to him indicated only that in a review of their files that they realized that he was still on medical leave, that his employment had not been terminated. That's what the letter indicates, that they were going through the files. They knew he was on workers' comp. They believed that he could not work. What they discovered was that his status as being an employee on leave had not changed.
No, I understand that, and it sounds perfectly fine. It's just that the fact that there is a pending workman's compensation proceeding makes you wonder whether that pendency has anything to do with the company's decision to fire him.
Judge, I believe that the March 1st, 2010 letter, I think, dispels of the wonder. But looking at the Second Amended complaint, there are no allegations in the Second Amended complaint that would give a plausible explanation to that sense of wonder. Under the Iqbal case, mere recitations of entitlement or liability are not enough. In the Second Amendment complaint, there are no allegations that are go beyond the conclusory assertion that there was retaliation.
Why was the plan put into the record?
We did not put it in the record because the plaintiff below had the burden of establishing their claims in the Second Amendment complaint. I cannot speak to why plaintiff's counsel below did not put it in the record.
The judge didn't express curiosity about that?
I don't recall anything being in the district court's opinion. There were attempts in the Second Amended complaint to characterize elements of the
There was never an oral hearing before the judge?
There was no oral argument on the motion.
So,
okay. Is there any further questions?
No.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor.
So, Ms. Geppert, your time had expired. We'll give you another minute if you have anything further you'd like to say.
Your Honor, what Mr. Brooks requests is that this court remand with instructions to allow repleading and to attach the plan to the pleading, and that would satisfy the concerns raised by this court, and we wouldn't have to undertake the expense or the time of discovery, as Your Honor has pointed out. Mr. Brooks has been an employee in name only for 11 years. As we've discussed today, he was permanently disabled in 1999 and cannot return to work as he alleged in his workers' compensation claim. What Mr. Brooks is seeking is the health and dental insurance benefits due to him until the age of 65, again, approximately 4 years, as provided by defendant's plan. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.